are unable to make it early. I'm going out today. I'm going to work very hard. It's my pleasure to introduce you to Professor Ian Yerian. Hi, I know if I pronounce it very well. Many years ago, when I started working on security and hypermedia, many people thought I was kind of paranoid because I was trying to secure data in a wall. But if you let time speak, then finally we are all concerned about security and the priority to do with all the things we do here, even resource, which is an access to my center computer. So I was very pleased when Professor Yerian accepted our invitation to do his speech here, because he is one of the pioneers in this area of security engineering, which is pretty much important to think of as well. Professor Yerian is professor at the Technical University of Dortmund. He is also affiliated to the Fraunhofer, also in Dortmund. Sorry for my confusion. And well, he has been in service with working between England and Germany, so he has a very broad experience, and he has been involved in many different research projects concerning security. So today he will be talking about model-based security engineering with UML, and I'm sure you will enjoy the work of Malcolm. Thank you very much again, Jan, for coming.
Thank you very much for the introduction, and of course, thank you much indeed for the opportunity to give this presentation, by which I'm very honored. So I think this has already been a very exciting conference for me as well, so I'm very glad to be able to be part of it. This talk will be about the use of visual languages for modeling systems, and more specifically, I will focus on a particular application domain for such modeling languages, namely security critical systems, which is currently receiving increasing attention. I will first give a brief overview on this research topic in general and how it has developed over the last decade, and I will then explain one such approach in more detail, namely the UMLTech approach. I will close with a discussion of where we stand today in the field and some interesting current and future challenging, in particular with respect from the point of view of the VLHCC community. So IT systems increasingly pervade virtually all aspects of business and industry, society, and even the lives of private individuals. This means that on the one hand, they are continually increasing security and privacy expectations on these systems. The more pervasive the systems become, the more damage can be done by someone who can misuse them. On the other hand, they have to become more open and flexible in order to be able to be integrated into today's complex systems in a pervasive way. Unfortunately, the more open and complex a system is, the more vulnerable it becomes. Thus, it is becoming more and more important, but also more difficult to make systems secure. Of course, there has been a lot of successful academic research on IT security over the last couple of decades. Some milestones on that are given on this slide. Nevertheless, IT systems in practice are unfortunately still insecure. This is witnessed by the fact that we have security incidents reported in the media on at least weekly or even daily basis. As a particular spectacular example from this week, when I came on the flight to Madrid 2 days ago, I read an article on a major German newspaper that apparently there was a military-grade attack on the Iranian nuclear program using a software virus. So, some quite impressive things happening today in the field of secure or not secure systems. And that means, so the question is, why are IT systems still insecure despite the successful academic research in security such as the references listed on the slide? And one reason for that is that on the one hand, current software engineering approaches used in practice still usually do not consider security. On the other hand, of course, there do exist security assurance approaches in practice which are being used, such as penetration testing, but they are not sufficiently complete or reliable to actually exclude all possible weaknesses. And that's, in fact, why we still have insecure systems. Otherwise, we wouldn't have them. So in that sense, the state of IT security in practice today is somehow similar to what is displayed in the photograph on the slide. So we do have security mechanisms, and we do have techniques for security assurance. However, these are still not sufficiently integrated into the overall system, making it an overall secure system. So not sure if you can see the details on the slide. This is like having a street which is blocked by a gate, which itself is secure, so it's not been broken or anything, but the cars have simply been driving around it, as you can see by the marks on the grass. So that's pretty much the state of the art in IT security in practice today, and as well the state of the art in developing security critical software. So that was more or less the starting point about a decade ago for several researchers to start a new line of research. Namely, the idea was to make use of visual modeling languages such as the unified modeling language in order to integrate security aspects into an up-to-date, practically usable software engineering approach, namely model-based development using the unified modeling language. So some examples for milestones in this field are listed on the slides. So as you can see, there is indeed a growing amount of work in this research area. So firstly, as I said, it started about 10 years ago. The emphasis in the beginning was mostly on, defining extensions of the UML to capture security-relevant information. And there exist several proposals for such notations by now, which are widely used and also sometimes in dedicated applications domains, such as, for example, relevant to this community, hypermedia systems. For these reasons, because we now have several of such notations, in recent years there was more emphasis on providing approaches and tools supporting the exploitation of those models, for example, in terms of code generation, model verification, model-based testing, monitor generation, and so on. In each case, with an emphasis on security aspects. Also, there's recent work on integrating model-based security with other non-functional requirements, such as performance, and on closing the gap between different phases in the system lifecycle, such as requirement engineering and design modeling. The first book on model-based security was actually published in the year 2005, and in 2009 the field officially became global by having the first book on model-based security published in Chinese. So, of course, this kind of research, as I said already, is very much motivated by practical problems. So that's what I said in the beginning. IT security is a problem in practice today. Therefore, of course, it's important to do research which eventually can be applied in practice. That's the motivation. And for that, it is very important to have strong tool support for the concepts and approaches that are proposed, in order to one day enable users in practice to actually use those results. Without tools, that wouldn't really be practical or feasible for them to do. Fortunately, there do exist a number of serious initiatives for developing such tool supports for model-based security. So on this slide, of course, this is just a random selection, and many more tools are being developed and are at various stages of development. But of course, one should note that this is still a young field, of course it is, as usual, the case that researchers develop ideas more quickly than they can also develop the associated tools for them, so there are still quite a lot of work that should be done with respect to tool support. And similarly, this field is very much motivated by practical considerations, so we should not only have tools, but we should also apply the results and the tools in an industrial context in order to make sure that it is actually usable in an industrial context and it does actually provide some return of investment for potential industrial users. So on this slide, again, there's a somewhat random selection of examples for such industrial use of model-based security techniques. So as you can see, it is being used increasingly in projects with industrial involvement, at least. But again, as in a similar situation as with tools, one could say that, of course, much more work should be done in this area as well. Although, of course, one should also notice that not all applications of the tools and approaches are always documented in the published literature. So sometimes it's not easy to even keep track of how much impact such research actually has in industrial practice. Okay, so much for a short overview of the field of model-based security in general. I would like to, for the second part of the presentation, focus on one such approach for model-based security in a bit more detail, the UMLSEC approach. So UMLSEC is an extension of the Unified Modeling Language for Security, meaning that, using the UML, you can define stereotypes and tag values in order to be able to express security-relevant information easily within UML specifications by simply including those predefined stereotypes in the UML models. So that's the general idea of this UMLSEC extension on the notation level. And on this slide, you can see an overview of what the idea is, how this notation should then be used as part of the system life cycle. Of course, generally, the general idea behind model-based development is that, and that is not, of course, specific to security, but applies to model-based development in general, is that before you actually start programming, you first create a model, a representation of the system, and only after that you will actually start programming. And that's, of course, also the idea here in the case of model-based security. So that means after elicitating the security requirements, you can include them in the UML models using the UMLSEC extensions and stereotypes. And this allows you then to analyze the models against those security requirements using the UMLSEC tool support. And as a next step, of course, you still have to go to the code level. Sometimes this can be done by automated code generation. At other times, you still have to manually create the code, but then you can at least generate test cases from the UMLSEC models in order to make sure that the code is actually conformant to the models. Something else which is also important is to be able to reverse engineer models from the code, because in practice it often happens that the code changes after, or requirements on the system change after you have actually started programming. So this is not a sort of static waterfall model which you can actually apply in practice, but it is a very iterative process, of course. So therefore it's important to also have tools which allow you to generate models from existing code, also to be able to, as far as possible, apply these assurance techniques to legacy systems which were not created using a model-based approach. So, of course, in this presentation, I will talk a lot about model-based development and how to use these security assurance techniques in that context, but, of course, we would also like to be able to apply those assurance techniques to existing systems which were not developed using model-based development techniques simply because they were not available at the time. But also we would like to be able to apply them to systems which today are developed, but not on the basis of the model-based development paradigm, simply because in industry, even though UML is talked about a lot, it is not really used in every project so far. And of course we would like to be able to have as broad impact as possible. So as a side remark, even though I will talk about a lot of model-based development, we are trying to actually generalize the techniques to be able to also to be applicable if a company doesn't buy into this new philosophy of model-based development. So that's the last part of the picture, which is pretty much standard model-based development applied to security. Then on the right side, you can see two somewhat additional boxes which are not often considered as part of model-based development, but which are important if you really care about security. The one thing is configuration data. By that I mean, for example, things like firewall rules or user permissions. And of course, for a system to be secure at runtime, it is very important not only that it is verified, secure, or statically on the model or code level, but it is also configured correctly and securely, because if the user permissions are set incorrectly, then the system is going to be insecure, at least with respect to its execution anyway, even though it might have been verified, secure, statically. So, and that's why it's important to also integrate these artifacts into the general picture. So we have tools which allow you to either generate such configuration data from the models, which again were verified against the security requirements, or also similar to the code in those cases where the configuration data is created manually or where it already exists. We have tools which allow you to verify the configuration data against the models and then thereby against the security requirements. And then the last box in this picture, the runtime system. So if you really get paranoid, as you already said, then of course it is not sufficient, not even to verify the system statically and to check the configuration data, but there still may be weaknesses in the system at runtime, even if you did all of that correctly. For example, of course, usually you verify the source code. However, you don't execute the source code. You use a compiler to compile the source code to bytecode, and that is executed. So what happens if the compiler is buggy or if the compiler is manipulated by someone who actually wants to include weaknesses in the code in order to be able to exploit it? So, of course, this is getting paranoid at another dimension. But, yeah, I mean, if you really worry about very highly security critical systems, then there may be industrial customers who do, you have the sufficient degree of paranoia to worry about such things. So therefore, what we've done is to extend this kind of approach to another assurance techniques, which allows us to generate runtime monitors from the UMLSEC models, which will check at runtime that the security requirements are actually satisfied and not broken. So that's the whole picture. But of course, one should keep in mind that even though we have many different assurance techniques for various phases of the system lifecycle, they are not really mutually redundant. So you might say, well, if I want to do this runtime monitoring anyway, why should I even care about all of the rest? I can just do the runtime monitoring in the end. But that's not really the case, so it does make sense to really apply all of the different techniques, for example, starting with model-level security for various reasons. So firstly, the earlier you can do verification and the earlier you can exclude bugs, cheaper it is to fix the system. Of course, there are some very classical studies by Barry Boehm which show that it's about 100 times, so a magnitude of 100 times more expensive to fix a bug when it is already in the code compared to fixing the bug during the requirements elicitation phase. That's one reason. Another more technical reason is that on the model level, because you are more abstract, because it's a model, it is much more performant to do an automated tool-supported security analysis on that level compared to, for example, code-level analysis. But of course, you can only find those bugs which are in fact visible on that level of abstraction. So it's always a trade-off. The more abstract your artifact, the more efficient the verification. But of course, you are missing detail which might then include a further security weakness. So that's why it actually makes sense to use all of the assurance techniques in all of the different system lifecycle phases, even though it might seem redundant. But of course, the emphasis is always on automation, because if we really want to do this together with industrial customers, then, security is only one aspect, and the more important aspect is cost, of course. So If we don't remain as automated as possible with the whole process, then they will not be interested. Unless, of course, you are talking about military systems. Okay, so now I would like to shortly zoom in a little bit on those various phases in the picture, which I shortly explained just now. Again, as I said, starting with the requirements engineering phase, so there we have developed an approach jointly with collaborators at the University of Hanover, Kurt Schneider, which supports security requirement engineers in identifying the security requirements within the requirement elicitation phase. So the idea there is to do security requirements mining in security relevant documents such as security standards, for example the common criteria or the given specification document for the system that should be built. And so we have developed a tool supported approach for that, and we have validated that approach at an industrial system, namely the IP-based television standard of the European Telecommunication Standards Institute, ETSI. So that's the workflow for that approach is visualized on the slide here, and the idea is very much on on supporting the flow of information and the flow of knowledge between the different stakeholders in the process of elicitating the security requirements and integrating them into the design of the system. So starting from a security instructor, which is a security expert that should support the stakeholders, because stakeholders such as customers that want the system to be built, the problem there is often that they don't really know much about security. They don't even know what security they want themselves or what they should want themselves, because it might be dedicated by legislations or laws. So you need usually some kind of expert that supports those stakeholders. Then, of course, there's the security requirements elicitation phase, where you somehow, again, with the technical security engineer, you have to come to an agreement about what the actual security requirements are supposed to be that have to be enforced in the system. And on the basis of our colleagues in Hanover, they have a tool that supports this elicitation process, and this we can use in order to handle those security requirements. As mentioned, so the idea here is to build on existing standards for security knowledge, and this is specifically the Common Criteria, which is an international standard originating from the US, containing security requirements on systems that should be certified. These are the documents that we use as a basis for our work, and where we used a tool-supported approach for mining security-relevant keywords from that document. And this allows us to actually also analyze the models that are created during the security elicitation phase in order to detect the security relevant keywords in order to be able to support the security elicitation work in that sense. So there's also a feedback loop included in this picture where, of course, the users that are part of this process, they will learn from the process, and the idea is very much to feedback that learned knowledge into the overall process. And in the end, of course, the goal is to feed the security requirements into the system design, which is then created using the UMLSEC modeling notation. So now, the next box is the actual modeling. So as I said, what we are mainly using is this UML security extension, UMLSEC. And as I mentioned already, the idea is there, you can use the UML and the predefined extension mechanisms for the UML in order to define stereotypes for the security requirements and for other security relevant information. And this allows you to firstly document security requirements and security relevant information in an easy way within the system documentation. And this is, from a practical point of view, this is already very important. So many security weaknesses arise in practice because of the following situation. So there is a security component designed and built by someone which in itself is secure and which is in fact secure if it is used under the assumptions on the environment of that component that the designer of that component made at the time when he designed the component. However, sometime later, someone just uses that component in a context which does not satisfy those requirements, and then of course it may become insecure. And it's not really the fault of the person who designed the security mechanism in the first place, but it's the lack of flow of information between the original designer of that security component and the people actually using it in the end. And that's a quite typical problem. So if you have an approach which supports and facilitates the communication between the security designers and the users of security components, then this will already buy you a lot of a lot in a practical context. So that's one issue. But of course, from the point of view of the technical level, what we want to do is not just to use this notation to document security relevant information, but also to be able to then do verification already on the model level, and not only when the code is already created. And for that, of course, well, if you know UML, there is so far no official formal semantics for UML. So if you want to use UML in connection with formal verification, you firstly have to define a formal semantics for the fragment of UML that you want to use yourself, or use it from some other researcher. So, and what we did there was in fact to define such a formal semantics for the fragment of UML that we want to use in the context of verification. And then, yeah, the security analysis. This is shortly how it works. So we have developed tools which, so the general idea is that the user uses their favorite UML editor in order to create firstly the UML model for the system, as they might do anyway. Secondly, include the UML sec stereotypes, because that's what we need for the security analysis. And then they can store that model as an XMI file that's usually supported by the UML editors. And then we have a tool framework which allows the users to input that XMI file, and the tool will then automatically transform or extract from that UML model, extract the relevant information that is needed to perform the security verification. And for the actual verification, we then use dedicated verification components such as model checkers or automated theorem provers. So what our tool does is to transform the UML model to the input representation for those verification tools, for example, in terms of first order logic. So next box in the picture is then, of course, eventually you still have to go to the code level. It's not enough that the model is secure, but I mean, of course, the system should be secure in the end, and in particular the code should be secure. So the question is how you can do that. And as I mentioned already, in many cases so far, it is usually not yet the case that you can just press a button and get the code completely automatically generated from the UML model. Of course, that is, for some people, that is the goal, to get there eventually, while other people say we will never get there on the whole anyway. There will always be some manual programming, so there's some kind of a philosophical or even religious debate in the UML community on that question, which I don't really want to become part of. So for our purposes, I say, well, okay, you may still have to do manual programming, but then at least I want to support the people who have to do that. And so one way of doing that is, in fact, of course, model-based testing. And again, as with many things I'm talking about, this is, of course, a topic not only for security specifically, but for model-based development in general. So there are people developing tools for model-based testing of code against UML models independently of security, with the goal of conformance testing. So of course one thing you could do in this context is to do a security verification of the models and then use one of the available tools for doing model-based conformance testing. In theory, that should result into a secure system. However, that way you can of course only detect the weaknesses that are in fact visible on the model level. If you, because with conformance testing, you usually don't get a 100% test coverage, because for complex interactive systems, that is usually not feasible. So it is not, it's one thing you can do, but it's not really complete. And that's the motivation for us to try to develop a more specific model-based testing approaches, specifically for security. On the basis of the experience that you usually don't get a complete test coverage anyway. So in terms of security, it would be good to be able to focus on those test cases that are particularly security relevant. And this is what we have been doing in this kind of work. The keyword there is mutation testing. So you not only want to test those history traces which according to the system should occur, but you also want to test those traces which are not necessarily specified by the system to occur. And in fact, for security, the latter test cases are actually more important than for functional testing. And that's a typical example for the difference between doing verification for functional requirements and verification for non-functional requirements like security. The problem is weaknesses arise precisely because the designer didn't think about what things can happen if users use the system in a way that they are not supposed to use it in. So, and of course the users, for example, can be attackers, but they could also just be careless users who will then be exploited by attackers. Okay, so this is the assurance technique which we are working on in this respect. And again, we have been validating that at an industrial system, the Common Electronic Purse Specifications, which is a specification for an electronic purse architecture, which has been developed by Visa International and other companies working in this field. And actually, we were able to find several security weaknesses using this approach. So much for security testing. Of course, nevertheless, I mean, even though we claim that security testing is better for security than just classical conformance testing, nevertheless, it will never be 100% complete either, even though, of course, we try to make it as complete as possible. And, of course, for that reason, there has been a lot of work in general on formally verifying source code, because the motivation there is that formal verification, in principle, allows you to get a much more complete assurance result on the code than you would be able to get using testing. From that point of view, this is of course also very interesting for security, because the problem in security compared to other application domains is always whenever there's just a single vulnerability left in the system and there is an attacker who is sufficiently motivated and sufficiently able to find the vulnerability, then you can be sure that sooner or later that vulnerability will be found. So that is the difference between security on the one hand and, for example, reliable systems or safety critical systems on the other hand, where in many cases you can make stochastic reasoning. You can say, well, I have requirements such as the probability that the system fails within 1 hour should be 10 to the minus 9, for example. That would be a typical requirement in the safety area, which is already very hard to achieve, of course. I mean, in terms of testing, that would mean that you would have to continually test the system for 100,000 years and only get one bug. And of course, most developers don't have the time to test the system for 100,000 years anyway. But security is even worse than that, because even with that one vulnerability, which in a, you know, in a stochastic system would only appear once every 100,000 years, that is still too much, because if you have, you know, in some part of the work of the world where there are able people who are nevertheless underpaid or even jobless, there will be someone who will find that vulnerability if there is sufficient monetary motivation to do so. So, yeah, again, that's the strong motivation for actually trying to do formal verification, even though, of course, it is more expensive to firstly develop those approaches, and then sometimes also for to use those approaches in a, in an industrial context. And that's why, again, in our work here, our main emphasis is on automation. So what we're trying to do is to extend existing static analysis approaches based on completely automated verification tools such as automated theorem provers, and apply them in the sense that the goal is to verify source code against high-level security requirements such as security and authenticity. Of course, there has been a lot of work on formally verifying source code for all kinds of properties, but so far there is surprisingly little work on verifying, for example, implementations of cryptographic protocols for high-level security requirements such as secrecy and authenticity. So there's a surprising gap in that area, at least until the last, until about 5 years ago, when quite a few approaches started in that area. I already mentioned this, the next box of that configuration data analysis. So there again, yet another significant problem in practice, So this, we actually found out by talking to some industrial partners, in this case, what used to be the second largest bank in Germany at the time. It's not anymore, but anyway, things change. They actually told us that, in their case, they have about 60,000 permission data entries in their whole company, which in principle would have to be checked on a daily basis to make sure that they are conformant with their security policies. So one example for a security policy in the banking environment is the separation of duty rule, which means that, for example, if there is a high credit, large amount of credit given, supposed to be given away, it should not be possible for a single employee of the bank to authorize that credit, because, you know, it's too risky, there might be fraud involved. So you need two people to sign off that business activity, and this should be checked on the basis of the user permissions, and that should be done on a daily basis, because the user permissions change continually. People go on holiday, they might have to delegate their permissions, they leave the company, new people are hired, etc. And unfortunately, well, this is not feasible. So basically, the status of when we talked to them, they told us, well, our internal revision department told us that we have to do something, but they didn't really know what to do about it, because it's not feasible to do that manually. And that's so that motivated us to also try to develop automated tools which support this kind of security analysis, and again in the context of a model-based security modeling and verification framework. And this is also something which we're currently working on as part of a project at Fraunhofer. And okay, so the last box, which I already mentioned, a bit more detail about that. The keyword here is security monitoring, and of course, again, there has been quite a bit of work in this area in the last couple of years. So I think one of the first approaches in that direction were the security automata by Fred Schneider a couple of years ago. And of course that was very important first work. And in a sense what we are trying to do here is to also work in that direction, but in a slightly different way. The reason for that is a little bit technical. So in that earlier work by Fred Schneider, he mostly concentrated on so-called safety properties, which are a certain way of formalizing properties that should be verified on the level of temporal logic. But in the case of the kind of security properties that we would like to enforce at the runtime level, we would like to be able to go beyond safety properties. So in collaboration with Andreas Bauer, who is now at NICTA in Australia, we used work from his dissertation in order to be able to use a three-valued semantics for temporal logic to be able to go beyond this safety fragment. And again, this has been validated on an industrially used system. In this case, this is a library, a security library from Java, the Java Secure Sockets extension, which implements various security protocols such as the SSL protocol. Okay, so tool support, I shortly mentioned already, and this is somehow the picture that represents the architecture of the UMLSec tool framework. And as I said already, the user uses the UML editor, includes the relevant security information, and then in this box here, this is somehow the UMLSec tool framework, where there are various kinds of security analyzers using different kinds of verification engines in order to get back a result to the user regarding to firstly whether the model is secure or not. If not, what are the possible attack scenarios? How can they be fixed? And then on the other level, also doing a assurance approach with respect to the actual source code. Okay, so this is somehow the technical overview about this one approach for model-based security, the UMLSec approach. Now I would quickly mention some results from a scientific point of view, which you now can derive if you have such a foundation. So I've already mentioned a couple of practical motivations, and I find them very important. However, of course, we are also scientists still, so we're interested in general scientific results, and this is what I would like to shortly comment on here. Is that a question? Or? No, okay, sorry. So what I would like to say here is now, as I said already, after what I said so far, we now have a basis for a notation, an extension of UML for expressing security relevant information as part of the UML notation, and we have a formal foundation for that, which allows us to formally verify those models for the security properties, and that can be useful in a practical context. But it, I think it also enables us to firstly ask and then also hopefully answer interesting scientific questions which we would not be able to even precisely formulate if we didn't have this formal foundation. So, and questions like the following. So if in the context of software engineering and software architectures, there are quite a few principles that software engineers like to use in order to structure the complexity of today's complex software systems. So what you can do is, for example, to do a horizontal layering of architectures. Something like that you often have, for example, in a protocol environment. I mean, you probably know this ISO-OSI model, where you have these seven levels of protocols. So that is one example for such a horizontal, vertical layering, actually. Of course, not horizontal, but vertical. And you can also find it in different application domains. For example, we had also a project with the German bank where they used the SSL protocol, which is one particular security protocol, and then they defined their own protocol on the top of that SSL protocol. And the question that always arises is whether if you have such a vertical layering, and you can establish that each of the layers enforce a certain security requirement. Does this mean that the complete stack of layers actually enforces all of those security requirements? And unfortunately, of course, the general general answer to that question is no, because in principle, well, each layer might enforce security requirements which are logically inconsistent. So if you then somehow manage to put those layers together, then of course they will not be able to enforce all of the security requirements if they are not consistent, because that doesn't it just doesn't work. So this doesn't work in general. However, on the basis of this notation and on the basis of the formal foundation, we were able to establish preconditions on when this actually does work. So preconditions on the different levels in this vertical layering and on the security requirements such that you can actually do that. You can verify each level separately, and then you can stack everything together, and the whole stack will then enforce all of the security requirements established on the different levels. But as I said, there need to be preconditions for that to be to work at all. And then, there, of course, there are different techniques, and modularization now actually mean the horizontal structuring in terms of system components, and there you can ask the same questions. If I have different components enforcing different security requirements, if they put them together, do they still jointly enforce all of the security requirements? And again, the question in general, the answer in general is, of course, unfortunately, no. But you can establish preconditions under which this actually does work. And then there are, of course, many other techniques which are currently researched in software engineering, such as service-oriented architectures, aspect-oriented architectures, and so on. And in each case, the question is always, does this technique actually support security, and does the particular technique preserve the security properties that, which I would like to have enforced in the system? And then a different class of questions is that not only on the in the technical architecture, but also with respect to the system development life cycle, software developers use certain techniques such as refinement of specification and refactoring of architectures. And in each case, you can ask yourself, if I apply this technique, does this preserve the security properties which I already verified before applying the technique? And of course, ideally, the question would be yes, because otherwise you would have to redo the verification every time you apply such a technique, which of course would be a lot of work. Here, fortunately, the answer, well, in each case, again, we were able to establish some preconditions on when this actually works. So I think I will actually not go into the details about how this works more specifically. So in the case of refinement, the answer was particularly positive because we would actually show that for our notion of requirement, refinement is always works, but I don't have the time to expand this in detail now. The same for memorization. So because I'm slowly running out of time, I would just like to say a little bit about the validation side. So as I said in the beginning, this kind of work is very much motivated by practical considerations. And then of course, as I said already, it is also important to validate whatever we develop in this area in an industrial context. And here I'm just giving one such example for a validation of one of the techniques in an industrial collaboration. In that case, with the German car manufacturer BMW, the system at hand was an internal information system, so-called meta search engine, which was a search engine applied to their internal company information system. So it's not an internet search engine or anything. And that's why it is actually security relevant. So otherwise, if you hear a search engine, you probably say, well, it cannot be security relevant anyway because it's public anyhow, etc. But that it wasn't public here. But in fact, many of the documents that were supposed to be searched in the internal company network were in fact security critical, and there were different user permissions which should regulate which user within the company should be able to see which documents or not, and that's why this was difficult and important from the point of view of security, and that's what where we used the EUMLSec approach in order to model this architecture and then use the EUMLSec tools to verify this model against the security requirements. And fortunately, and that's why I am allowed to mention this here, fortunately the result was that in fact the system is secure. Otherwise, I probably would not be able to say it, that we even talked to them. Of course, there's just one example, and there's been a number of other industrial validation examples of the EUMLSec approach, which, I don't have the time to go into details, but if you're interested in any of them, I would be happy to talk more about that maybe in the break. Shortly coming to an end, of what I mentioned on the previous two slides is some kind of validation, because we tried out the approach in an industrial context, and the goal is to be able to be usable in industrial context. However, again, from a scientific point of view, so I'm always trying to stay on both feet here. On the one hand, I'm interested in practical applications, but I'm still a scientist, of course, so from that point of view, it's maybe not sufficient to have single applications of an approach in industry, but we would like to come to a more empirically complete picture of whether or not it makes sense to use this kind of approaches. Unfortunately, the picture there is very incomplete, to say it politely, but this is not just a problem with model-based security, it's also at least a problem with model-based development, and maybe it is a general problem with software engineering or even computer science. So I don't know yet. So the question here is, from the point of view of practical application, does it actually pay off to use, for example, model-based security techniques in practice compared to traditional insurance techniques? And of course, in the beginning of the talk, I claimed that from my point of view, it does pay, and that's the motivation for us to develop these approaches. However, I may not be very objective because I am working in this area, and of course we have to sell this work. Eventually it would be good to come to a more objective assessment of this, whether the statement is actually true. We have made some very first initial attempts in that direction, although of course from a point of view of scientific validation, it is also questionable whether we should be the people who should do that, whether we could actually be as objective, but anyway, because no one else has done it so far, we have done it ourselves in some first steps, the results are, on the one hand, of course, it is more effort to use model-based approaches as opposed to not using them. Because you have to create models, which otherwise you might not do. You have to insert the security information, etc. And, of course, it should also be said that the classical assurance techniques do find bugs, and that's why the companies are using them. They're not just too lazy or too stupid to do something better, but for their point of view, they actually work quite well. But what we think a result might be is that the model-based assurance techniques are able to find a certain very, random and seldom bugs in a more reliable way. So if you really want to have a high level of assurance, it does pay to use model-based assurance for those bugs which you cannot easily find with testing. So the goal is not to replace the traditional assurance techniques, but to extend them if you want to have a level of assurance that goes beyond of what you can already have today in industrial practice. So this is of course just a very preliminary result, and so this was the short overview about the one particular approach for model-based security, which of course is only one of those approaches which I happen to know best, that's why focused on that in part of this presentation. But to close the presentation, of course, coming back to the more general picture, where are we today now in model-based security? So yeah, I think there are some positive news. So it does seem that companies are indeed increasingly active in this area. So there is a company, Interactive Objects in Germany, that has actually been quite active in model-based security for a couple of years. Another small company in the UK, also very active. Then there's a larger company who is actually a partner in a EU project, which I'm part of, which are also very active now in this area. And I'm sure a number of other companies which I'm probably not even aware of. Another thing to note, so there's this general body of knowledge in security developed by the US Department of Homeland Security in 2005, where indeed model-based security is mentioned as a general technique in this area. More recently, Gartner has discovered the topic of model-based security, so I guess this is a clear claim to fame of a scientific approach with respect to industry. If there is a dedicated Gartner report on that technique, then there may be some hope, I guess, and that happened a couple of years ago. And interestingly enough, so there's a quote from, I think, the abstract of that report. They do mention the keyword adaptive to changes, which, of course, you might now notice that so far I didn't talk about system evolution at all. So far I always assumed that you more or less you use the sort of linear waterfall approach and then you're done with the system, it's constructed and it's secure and you will never change it, which of course is completely unrealistic. So something which I now really don't have the time to explain because the time is up is that, so in terms of current and future challenges, so this is something which we are currently working on as part of a EU project. The question, what do you do if you have a model-based security approach, everything seems to be fine, however, your system decides that it wants to evolve. And most systems decide that they want to do that. So what does that mean for security? I mean, you finished all of that security assurance techniques, you are happy that you have implemented a secure system, and then suddenly it changes. What do you want to do? Do you want to redo all of those assurance techniques from scratch, which might be quite a bit of work, even if they're automated? I mean, someone has to use the tools, at least. That would not be good. So it would be better, of course, if you can also establish general results that evolution might not actually break the security properties which you have established. So this is something which we are currently looking at. Or it would be even better if you could use evolution as a first-class modeling concept inside the modeling notation. So in a similar way that we use security as a first-class modeling concept within UML as part of UMLSec, would be good to extend it in another dimension. Of course, you could do that independently of security, so you might have an extension of UML for evolution, and of course also people are working on that independently of for security. But for us now the challenge is how to bring those two things together, because then it becomes particularly challenging. Okay, and we've done some initial work in that direction, which I don't have the time to really talk about. So now I'm really coming to the end. This is the last slide. So future challenges, and maybe particularly from the point of view of this conference, of course, firstly, there are many challenges still to consider in this area. It is a very young area. It has very many ongoing motivations arising from practice. Security is still an unsolved problem. And some of the future challenges are mentioned here. So some of them are actually more or less general for model-based development, but they are particularly important and difficult if you consider security. But of course, you could also consider them outside the security context. So first thing, for example, if you compare model-based development with traditional programming, then you notice that there are certain things missing in this community which exist in the traditional programming community. For example, in traditional programming, you have open source programmers which provide you with a large body of source code which you can happily analyzed, and people are doing impressive work there in all kinds of directions. Unfortunately, you don't really have that in models. So there are some people trying to get in that direction. So for example, Robert Franz in Colorado has set up a model repository in order to try to tackle that problem, but still I think it will take quite some time to get to the same stage that you have in programming, where you have all of these big open source repositories. Similarly, libraries in programming, you have lots of libraries if you look at Java, for example, and this allows the developers to encapsulate and reuse functionality on that level. In models, you don't really have that a lot. So there's not really so much of a sense of reuse of models so far. And of course, these are general problems, but also would be useful for security modeling. And I already mentioned this issue of, well, does it actually pay off for industry to use modeling in the first place? And of course, this is always the claim of the scientists that this is the case, but now with my job at Fraunhofer, I actually have to talk to companies on an almost daily basis, and I see that it is actually quite difficult to convince them that this is actually true, the statement. And I don't really have any hard data to support the statement either. And this doesn't really exist, not just because we don't have it, but it doesn't seem to exist in the community on the whole. And I think we have to get it if we want to convince industry in the long run that they really should be interested in this research and maybe even should support this research financially. And then, of course, there are challenges more specific for model-based security, in particular with respect to this community. So the question, usability, scalability of security modeling, notations, and tools. So, of course, as I mentioned already, there do exist several security modeling notations now. However, probably they were developed relatively ad hoc. So I don't think that in each case there was a usability expert at hand who would have guided the people who developed this security extension to make sure that it is actually optimally usable, etc. So I think there would probably be quite a lot of room for improvement for those UML extensions with respect to the usability of the notations and also of the tools. So the general question is how to represent complex information such as security information as part of visual diagrams in an understandable and usable way. And then the other, another example for the question, could there be something like a human-centered security design? So I think that would also be a very interesting question to ask. And there are real problems in that area which you might experience yourself, because everyone today, of course, is subjected to security in some way. For example, passwords. So many users are forced to use, or all users are forced to use passwords. Administrators try to force users to use secure passwords, sometimes by forcing them to change it every 30 days, sometimes even by generating random ones, because typically users would just choose passwords which are too weak. However, those attempts usually backfire because people cannot memorize those secure passwords and they write them down somewhere and then the whole system becomes insecure anyway. So I think there's, again, a lot of scope for improvement in that area to come towards a sort of human-centered security, which we don't have so far already. And this is now really finally the end. I think I ran over by a few minutes. I hope it's not a problem, but thanks a lot.